Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Traveling with Françoise. I'm Françoise Rhodes, your host. Thanks so much for joining us today. As you missed the first, maybe you missed the first hour of the show. For those of you who don't know, I know we have a lot of listeners who go to church as well, and you get out and you turn us on right and as soon as you get in the car or wherever. But we had a great show in the first hour. Pasquale Esposito, the Italian tenor, called in from New York City, right in the middle of New York City. It was crazy over there, and was telling us about his event here December 7th. And we had a winner for two tickets to his concert on December 7th at the Annenberg Theater, and that was Dan Scanny. So we want to congratulate Dan, and for all of you that missed winning those tickets and we didn't pick your line, oh well, sorry. But we're great to have you with us today again as we shift into travel mode. All right, joining us in studio right off the bat on this busy day here in the Coachella Valley is Vincent Battaglia. Hi, Vincent.
Hi, how are you, Françoise?
I'm fine, thanks.
Nice. Happy Sunday.
Yeah, happy Sunday.
Happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day. Yes, I know a lot. I was talking in the first hour, so much going on in the Coachella Valley.
Yeah.
Including the big parade downtown.
Right.
Yes.
Right. It's a particularly historic Veterans Day because the end of the First World War, the 100th anniversary, and that's I was sure to call my veteran friends and to thank them for their service on this day, and thank everybody out there who's done so much for this country by serving. But it's so you can't really say Happy Veterans Day.
Well,
we're probably not supposed to celebrate the day, but we are supposed to give praise and recognize. So.
And I completely agree with you on some of these where you say Happy something. It's almost like even Happy Halloween. How does that sort of fit? Because Halloween's not supposed to be weird and scary
it's
and all that
stuff. Not a celebration of anything.
But, yeah, exactly. Or Happy Memorial Day. And some of these, I totally agree. I don't know who put the happy in there somewhere. Maybe they just didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
I am with you. I like to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and I'm also one of those that believes we shouldn't just be doing it one day of the year. We should be doing it all the time.
Right. I was fortunate to speak with a group, and my gosh, I'm going to forget the name. It was a Marine Tactical Unit that's that meets once a month out here in the desert. And about 6 months ago, we talked a little bit about microgrids and such to them. And I lived in Russia in the 90s, and it was interesting whenever the Russians love to be recount how they were the originators of everything from automobiles to fax machines to elevators. And,
they
will show you the historic documentation. They love to come up with that. But man, when it comes to talking about military, they bow to the American military.
Oh.
Their descendants I say that wrong, but it's their paratroop troop. It's their elite forces. I filmed a movie in Russia about the meeting on the Elbe River after the Second World War between the British, the Americans, and the Russians. And we filmed on a tank base, and that was also a base where the paratroopers were headquartered. And we were there for a couple of years filming. And things take a long time in Russia. I just remember the countless conversations about how, they would talk about, boy, we're great at this, we're great at that. But those American Marines, and that just, brought pride. Yeah, I mean, what do you say? You can say, yeah, that's it. You know, it's true. We've worked very, very hard to take that lead role and to lead by example. And the Russians, who I think most folks wouldn't think that they were envious of our position there, are extremely envious of how strong and how much valor our troops have. So.
Well, they're certainly not bragging about it. In fact, Sean and I, and of course, for those of you that just so you can rest assured that Sean Flanagan's in the boardroom. There he is right there in this hour of the show.
On the board.
We were talking.
Not bored.
Yeah, not bored. Look at us. I don't know. What are you doing in there, Sean? Oh, okay.
Okay. The levels.
Oh.
The levels going back and forth.
Oh, the levels. Oh, okay. Thank you. That's what he does. He does all these buttons over there.
He keeps his level.
Yeah, he keeps his level. And we were talking in the first hour of the show, and I was telling people that you were going to be joining us, that we were trying to figure out, because when you were here during the summer, and we ran out of time so quick, and we were talking about Russia and your travels and all these things that you have been doing. And for those, just a little recap, but Vincent isn't here to talk about Renova Energy, which you founded, because we talk about it a lot. But we
have
you talk about it all the time.
No, they're not.
Oh, yeah. But here to talk about travel. Well, you know what? It is fascinating, though, some of the things you've done. Here you're talking about a movie that you made in Russia. I mean, come on. And Sean and I were trying to think, what were we talking about Russia with Vince? So with Vincent here. So now you make me recall some of the things we were talking about. Have you been back to Russia since you did that movie?
No. No.
Is there any reason why?
Just left in 99 when the economy fell apart. I came back, came right here to the desert where we had a family has always come down here since, from the 80s on. And we had a little condo. And I came back to recoup and get myself reset. And I just found that I loved this community. And so I've been here since 99. And I haven't been back to Russia with Facebook. You know, being able to reach out to all of my friends who are still in Russia and keep connections with them and hear all, you know, where everybody is, it's good enough for me. I enjoyed that period of my life. It was a doctorate in living,
right?
Because, you know, you're really coming from America, you know, putting yourself into that. I was fortunate to be in Russia at that time from 92 up to 99. So
did you ever feel uncomfortable? I guess I could use the word threatened, because a lot of times when we're traveling around the world, we tend to a lot of times play it safe, stay in a little bit more what we would consider safer areas or no, which is smart to do,
right?
Because not knowing every place in the world has bad areas. I don't care where they are. They all have them.
Right.
It's just fact of life.
Right.
But when you were there living, that's a different experience than just traveling to a place. You were behind the scenes and going all over. Did you ever feel uncomfortable as an American or threatened in any way?
The point where I actually applied for and received my Russian citizenship and a passport. Because when you are carrying an American passport in everything, if you get pulled over by their militia, which is their highway patrol, or or you're stopped on the street for any reason, you pull out an American passport, you are it's open season on all of, you know, what would you call it? Shakedown.
Yep.
So, and that gets dangerous, you know, and after a while it gets tedious. You're like, all right, I know I'm an American, but, you know, I speak your language. I know your culture. I respect your culture, your people. Have a little respect. And every time it was a shakedown. So yes, carrying that passport and having a healthy ability with the Russian language, and you know, it took 3 years for me really of immersion to understand it, to speak it, to have the accent, to know how to read it. Writing, I still can't. I don't think I ever will. But yes, it inspired me to to get that passport so that you could be considered one of them. It was very important. The Russians are extremely civic minded. They're very, you know, they love their past, they love their history, and so foreigners will always be foreigners there.
I hear that. Do you still speak Russian? I was going to have you, when we go to break, say something like, we'll be right back or something about that.
Of course. Thank you. I get very little practice. There are quite a few Russians in our community here.
Really?
A lot of Ukrainians as well out in the valley. But I very rarely get the opportunity to speak. So.
You brought up something interesting. Last week we had Steve Knoll and Lala Alvarez. They're the founders of ACT Adult Customized Tours, and he has been putting tours together for 40-some years. And they've gone all over the world. And we were talking about how American travelers tend to want to travel and act like they're in America.
Right.
And that's
sickening.
Very – well, I mean, and you were getting just from what you were saying – I think you could almost point out why it's so offensive to the countries that we go to from experience.
Right,
that you were trying to shove being an American down anyone's face when you were working there.
No.
You just
but
weren't
you don't
American.
Know.
Yeah.
You're in America, and when you're there, you don't know.
And did they explain, and maybe this can shed some light, and I'm always trying to explain to the listeners, when you travel, you're traveling to their country to experience their culture.
Right.
That's why you're there,
not
to be in America.
Right.
And why, when you were there and you were hearing, I'm sure the Russians were talking to you about this and saying things, did they ever say to you why that bothers them so much when Americans do that?
Absolutely. It bothered them more. You know, it is one. It's that American imperialism, you know, which the world, the ugly American. I mean, we don't like that label, we should stop personifying it when we travel places. Mm-hmm. It's so much better for the soul to integrate yourself into the culture that you're visiting. And if if you don't want to read books ahead of time, when you get there, keep your mouth shut and observe. And Americans really, we don't like that, because when we see something, quote unquote, air quotes, wrong with a culture, if it's not like America, it's considered wrong. Why can't you be updated in transport or in your monetary system? And when we see something wrong, we feel it's our role as Americans to speak out. You know, they've gotten along, the rest of the world,
has gotten along rather well. Right, without us
without
interfering,
us.
Yes,
right.
Before us even.
It's funny, we just traveled to Italy. My father wanted to visit his aunt who turned 100, and this was a year ago. And even in Italy, the Italians love to be Italians. And yes, they watch TV. I mean, America has managed to inundate the airwaves with Americanism through movies, television, et cetera, and then selling and reselling it with, some subtitling, sometimes none. And the Italians are very proud of being Italian. And American, I just watched so many ugly Americans when we were in Italy. And so I don't speak Italian, but I just would draft very closely to my father, who speaks, just to, to stay close, to understand what was going on. If you keep your mouth shut and you observe more, you will get so much more from your travel experience. Yeah, and that's... I guess it's boring. It sounds boring to us, but it really is a better way if you'd rather not upset folks or play that ugly American. And you really will come away with so much more perspective, because that's why you're traveling ultimately, is to get perspective of another culture.
To experience. And I remember the first time in Italy, the dinner went not till 9 o'clock or something.
Right.
And it goes for 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
And the American wants to jump in there at 7 or 6:30,
eat dinner,
get
out
of there,
and get out.
And be gone. And then everybody be looking at him and to immerse yourself. So we wanted to immerse ourselves in the culture. We would eat with locals and went everywhere we've traveled. It's always been a thing of mine to try to be with the locals. So, all right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have a lot more to talk about. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise right here on Money Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. You're listening to Traveling. It's okay. We have this really heavy conversation going on. With us today is Vincent Battaglia. He's the founder of Renova Energy, local here. How long have you been living in the Coachella Valley?
It's 20 years this year.
20
years since 1999.
My gosh.
Yeah, we've moved around my whole life, and this is the longest I've ever spent, and this will be the place where I die.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad. I was worried you were going to say I'm moving
community.
Or something.
Yeah. No. This is my home. And
Well, we were talking about travel. Of course, the travel industry right now is at all-time high. I mean, it is crazy what is going on out there. Of course, there's more disposable dollars out there, but we're getting travelers into the U.S., and that's growing. Travelers abroad, that is growing from all over the world. In fact, they're saying that China actually is going to take over as the number one tourist destination in 2030.
Wow.
Which has been interesting here because for the last several years in the United States, we have been doing all travel agencies and whatnot have been doing all they can to woo the Asian market to the United States and learning how to have what they want here, which is interesting because we're talking about going from Asian culture, when they come here, travelers, they really want to immerse themselves in the American culture.
Right,
that's what they're here for.
That's right.
They care less about their own.
We
really
know very, very little about the Asian cultures
as
Americans. So it is about time that we turn the planes around in the other direction.
And to try to figure out what's going on as far as travel. So we'll see. This will be interesting as China takes over that top destination. But again, travel right now is at all-time high, and they really don't see that backing off at all. So Vincent and I, we were talking about different things going on in the world. We were talking about how our Americans are perceived when we travel, which is normally bad, because our responses going into countries, our first responses are not always good. I remember traveling with someone that landing in Italy, and there was all this graffiti all over at the airport. This was back in the 90s, I want to say. And that person said, well, gosh, I feel like I'm in, I don't even want to say what country, but they were so disappointed.
Right.
I said, well, wait a minute, we're only at the airport.
Yeah,
can we get out of here and let's go see what else is here? And then it became a fabulous trip. So we do tend to want things boom, 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 and
we judge them
that way.
Just on some
right.
of those, the most populated touristy areas. Mm-hmm. If you get off of that trail, you won't see, you know, it's most countries try to clean up the tourist trail, but it's so fake. It's
yeah.
just, it's always done in a way that gives you the you know, kind of the stereotype culture of everywhere we go. That's why you have to step off the streets,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so fine. You're still going to find graffiti off the streets, but, you know, it's a part of the reason why we travel. And we were yeah. talking, if you don't mind, if I...
Oh, no, bring it up. We brought up Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah,
I'm still
big,
shocked because, like you said, they keep saying this final episode.
Yeah, and it is, I don't think that that America, and I'm not saying he's a cultural icon, but he fell into a great role, a mm-hmm. very necessary role that no one else in public or private or political sectors has ever breached, that Americans are by nature inquisitive,
mm-hmm.
and and the inverse of that is that he's helped very many Americans understand what it's like and why you won't die getting your passport and going elsewhere and wait. And like you were saying, you know, in certain countries, you don't eat until 9 o'clock. Why you won't starve to death
yeah.
if you go to Spain and have your tapas at 11, 12, you know, mm-hmm. 1 o'clock. And I think it's cultural bridge makers like that we just have so few of in this country. We all seem to think that anyone who crosses our borders should go there and bring a part of America, where Bourdain crossed into cultures and
right.
brought a bit of those cultures back to our country.
Right.
And in all of its rawness, and no matter mm-hmm. what they were going through politically, socially.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so important. And he could have gone on decades.
Oh, yeah, that's why I can't get over it. I just yeah. can't get over why he did that, but he did it, so
yeah.
we can't change that.
Yeah.
But he took food, which is such an important part of travel. It seems when people are afraid to do anything else, they still might be afraid to eat, but they will go and eat. That
right.
becomes a big part of a day for a lot of people.
We all have to eat.
We all have to eat, and instead of him making it a food show,
right.
he made it a show about travel where he ate
right.
at these places, which
right.
was really fascinating.
Yep.
And like you said, he did bring their cultures, and he brought it in such a way where, I mean, it didn't feel like a made-for-television TV
exactly.
show.
Yeah, you brought up a good point.
Yeah.
He could have gone and just talked about food
yeah.
and ingredients
mm-hmm.
in a meal. Instead, he spoke about ingredients in a culture.
Yep.
What makes up that culture? How mm-hmm. and then he would cross-pollinate why certain foods were certain ways as a result of the culture evolving the way that it
yep.
did. And who, I mean, we again, oh my gosh, I forgot his name. We were talking about him.
Huel.
Huel. I
Huel
keep messing
yeah.
that up.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Huel, God rest his soul too.
Yeah.
Huel was a kind of a regional bridge maker.
Right.
You know, a California, specific to California.
Mm-hmm.
And that has its, you know, that's great. It has its depth. It also has its limitations. And Bourdain had the world.
Yeah. At his fingertips. It's just yeah. incredible.
Yeah, it's sad. I just keep
yeah,
seeing
it is sad. But, and one thing I know I've always been, because in the beginning, when I met my husband, he had a sailboat. We used to go to Mexico all the time. And the first thing we did was we always said, okay, we are in their country and we're going to use their shore boats and we're not going to go in there and we're going to eat their food. We're going
right.
to go to those little stands outside and eat like everyone else.
Nothing better than
nothing
that.
Nothing
better.
I remember a few times waving the flies away and thinking,
sure.
okay. But the food was always so darn good
right,
that I thought,
right.
you know what? This is it. Well, this is really so beautiful.
Right.
But because of all that, I have learned that and met so many wonderful people.
Right.
And I know you have had this happen where
right.
they invite you into their home. They
right.
want to show you, and they're so proud of the way they live.
Yep.
And they want to show us.
And we think that when we look around through observation, our wonderful American eyes of observation, we think that, you know, certain things are missing. You know, why isn't there water on the table?
Yeah.
Why isn't there? And yet, if we would just pull back
mm-hmm.
from that, I'm not saying lower your expectations, remove your expectations entirely.
Yeah.
And the universe just provides so many ample opportunities for you to have great experiences.
Yeah.
And you only get to a great experience once you drop preconceived notions. And that's what travel is all about. Travel is discovering in yourself how you can and should drop your preconceived notions. And you'll have pleasant surprises everywhere, anywhere you go.
And you don't even need to speak the language. If you just try, if you know just couple words and try, people from around the world, and we here appreciate, well, we should appreciate when other people are trying to speak our language and they're traveling, and we don't. Well,
that's
we should.
Sad.
And we go there and we say a few words in their language and they might laugh at us.
They might laugh,
but
that's fine.
They appreciate that we're even trying.
Yep. And Americans, it's sad when people have accents here and we will go out of our way to make fun. When I was younger, I remember I would make fun, and my father had it out with me. My father immigrated from Italy, and so when he was younger, he had an accent, and people would make fun of him, and he grew out of that. I mean, took a concerted effort to take all the Italian accent out of it, which is sad.
Yeah, it is sad, because now he wishes – well, he probably can go right back to it, but everybody
loves the accent. That's what – to a point. And out here, though, I don't – my father was upset with me when I was making fun of accents when I was younger.
Oh,
yeah. And taught me, no, that person knows something you don't. So you hear an accent, that person's an interesting person.
All right. We have to go to break. I know my mother still fights with people on her accent. She'll say things because she has a strong – I don't think it's strong, but they think a strong French accent. And they always go, what? Really? I can understand that.
Right,
perfectly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Try a little.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Traveling with Françoise.
Fair enough.
Are we back on the air? Oh, Sean, what are you doing? What? Vincent and I have said these big,
heavy
conversations.
I thought you were the leveler.
I told you I said this in the last commercial, and I was like, okay, they're just going to keep talking, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, what were we talking about? The weather?
All sorts of things. With us folks today is Vincent Battaglia. He is the founder of Renova Energy. And for those, and I'll just refresh your mind, during the summer, Vincent came on, and the first thing he said, well, Françoise, what are we going to talk about in the travel hour of the show? Well, the show went by so fast. So I said it was time for Vincent to come back and let's talk
more about travel.
Yeah, it's so much fun because you're out there constantly all the time and you're out and about and you get this fresh perspective on both ends of the realm from the worker, from the employer's standpoint when you go to different countries and the traveler's standpoint and plus your dad from Italy and all this sort of stuff. So you're kind of getting it from all different angles.
Everywhere I go. And, now it's fun because this last decade plus I've been with solar. Every country I go to, I feel bad for my traveling mates because I'm always looking at rooftops and I'm always saying, wow, look at that. They must have, a feed-in tariff here because they're using all this land for, for ground-mounted systems or, I'm constantly on the lookout. And it's interesting when we come back because I'm starting to see the growth in our industry here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. We are really taking over where other countries had begun the renewable revolution with solar and batteries, and America is marching just headlong into it. Finally.
I mean, I do wonder, and this makes me think of a quick story. Back the first time I went to France, I remember going to a grocery store, and this was, again, back probably in the 90s, that I remember being at the local grocery store, and there weren't any bags.
Right.
You were supposed to bring your own bag then.
Russia, it was the same way.
I did not know that. And I'm thinking, no bags?
Right.
We're used to always getting bags. And then I think if we wanted a bag, it was a penny or a nickel or something.
Right.
And that was way back then. So then it makes me realize how far behind in so many ways as far as sustainability and
even bottles. In Italy too, you are supposed to bring your own glassware when picking up wine, your table wine, your water if you want sparkling water, and they have dispensers, and the dispensers are like iconic copper, in most grocery stores because you dispense your own. They don't want all that plastic.
All the plastic. So it is fascinating. And I can imagine how your mind works, even though when you're trying to be on vacation, can you imagine folks, Vincent, over somewhere on vacation, you see some solar panel somewhere and you're just like fascinated.
I want to climb a building. And people are like, now, come on now. We don't need to do that. We don't need to harass those people.
Yeah. This time you are on vacation, Vincent.
Right.
So can
Leave
you, and you just say, sure. And then you sneak over later on and go look at it.
No matter what.
All right. Space travel. You Yes. And I've never talked about space travel.
No, I love space
travel. So I don't. Okay. I kind of had a feeling that you might. Orion Span, a luxury space hotel, is offering a flat rate of $50,000 commission for travel agents to book these outer space adventures.
Wow.
These are 12-day trips to the Aurora Station that begin at a rate of $9.5 million per person.
Wow, look at that.
So my affordable. Question to you,
yes.
Would you go to space for 12 days?
Absolutely. That's where solar was really founded. I'm going to go back to solar on this one. That was why solar was first utilized on satellites, because batteries, they didn't want to carry batteries up on those satellites. It would add all of the extra weight for the materials that go in a battery.
Mm-hmm.
But you needed to be able to send impulses to communicate back to stations on Earth. So solar panels, essentially the little solar cells, were attached to the outside of spherical orbiting satellites. Oh. And then they knew that once they sent that into space, wherever that little globe would rotate as a satellite, it would always face the visible spectrum of the sun and be able to create impulses through the photovoltaic effect and send communication back down to the planet. So it's fascinated me how that was the first step with Bell Labs in the 50s and how we've evolved. And I would love to go to space. The cool thing that I've noticed was since funding was cut for NASA,
it was
a horrible thing to happen to this country, that we led so strongly in and could have done so many wonderful things, especially like moon exploration.
Yeah.
There's no reason why we couldn't colonize and set up there except for the transport. So in the mid-2000s when they cut all the funding Elon Musk is a strange dude, but he figured out there was with SpaceX where there was a great gap, where as a private entrepreneur, he could step in where NASA and the government couldn't fill the ability to send rockets up to continue on the march into space.
Mm-hmm.
He did. He filled that gap with SpaceX. And it's interesting how so with cargo, the payloads are expensive, and sending satellites up and sending food to the orbiting space stations, et cetera, and people next. And so when NASA saw that about 3-4 years ago, then they jumped back in. And you'll notice that NASA is now, you know, refunding and putting more money into not just space exploration, but into cargo and transport.
Well, I mean, they want to make it another type of adventure for the people that can afford it.
Yeah.
And after a while, I mean, down the road.
That's how they pay for it.
Yeah. Would you go in the first group up to
Great question. No, I will go after you. Absolutely. When
you
tell me when you go.
I want to go. Okay,
would you go?
I would go.
And what would you expect to see once you got up there? What would that look like? Is it 7 days of weightlessness or great views? What are we going up there for?
I think just the entire experience, the getting there, the being in the vehicle that's going to take me there, the docking. I mean, I am fascinated by the strangest things. I don't know. In the Blue Angels, when I went in the Blue Angels jet, the pilots were so worried. Do you want to turn over? Do you want to flip? Do you want to do this? But I was more interested in, tell me how the G-force works. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the ground that looked like it was going nowhere, but yet we were going at, I don't know how many, 100 miles per hour. It was crazy up there. But it's just
Experience, huh?
The experience of it all that people really lose a lot of times when they travel, even if it's from here to the top of the tram.
Sure.
They sometimes forget the experience of being in that tram and the ride even going up there.
See, that's a good point. Yeah, I look at the end goal, which is the more times we and companies that are involved in space exploration, the less expensive it will be.
True.
It become.
Yes.
Then we'll be able to use that just for standard travel. I mean, imagine being able to go from L.A. back to L.A. in you know an hour and a half. It's all that cool stuff, utilizing the technology that we currently have, but pressing the boundaries, pressing the limits.
Right.
And, you know, that's what I look at. And it's funny to hear you're like, no, you know what? It's experiential.
It's the experience
of going up. And so,
do you know that they're bringing the Concorde, a form of a Concorde, back?
I didn't know
I'd want to go on that too. Yeah.
Okay. Why did that go
away?
And not
that I have a need for speed because of just the jets were getting old, very old. Okay. And the sound. In fact, one of my notes here. Where did I put it? Usually I'm a little more organized, but one of them, they're trying to come up with a silent sonic boom.
Okay.
How do they do? I don't know, but you brought up Elon Musk. I personally think he's a genius. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think the guy has so much going on in that brain of his that is unbelievable.
Yes.
Not a lot of people can deal with that and understand that. And I think it threatens them. I do think people that I'm sure you in your own way, and you don't even know it, threaten people that think they might know a little bit about solar, but they hear a little bit come out of your mouth and they realize that they don't know much about solar. So then,
yeah. And then I don't know everything, but that is my one area. Elon seems to want to know everything about everything.
Yeah.
You know, Elon is a double-edged sword working in an industry where he is so influential, like the solar industry. For example, he came out with those roof tiles. Tells the world that roof tiles are here. That's it. You're all going to be putting my roof tiles and replacing the tiles on your roof, and no longer will you have to have those standard solar panels that everyone else is. Okay, Elon, the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
When is that going to happen? Oh, it's coming right around the corner. The problem is you have a lot of folks out there, not a tremendous amount, but when he first came out with a statement about solar PV roof tiles, you had folks saying, you know, I'm going to wait to get solar. Well, why are you waiting? Because of Elon. Well, as you wait the 10 years until a roof tile does come out, you're losing all of that money. You're avoiding all of the savings that standard photovoltaics can deliver to you. Yeah. So, it's a double-edged sword. Great. Thanks. You know, and by the way, he wasn't the first to make those tiles.
Yeah.
The Shell made roofing tiles in the 80s and Dow in the 90s. Several companies, Soleil Tile, did the same thing in the 2000s. So Elon wasn't the first. But when it comes out of his mind, everyone thinks it's a first. Exactly.
Well, I found this little note here. It says NASA is testing quiet sonic booms over Galveston. The tests are being conducted to determine acceptable noise levels for overland sonic booms from civil aircraft. Concorde, the new form of Concorde, including commercial and private jet. And that was one of the reasons, for the Concorde. Noise level. It could only go out of certain airports because it needed length of runway, and the noise was so loud. So
they must do something out of the rear jet where they send an impulse, because all it is impulse. It's waves. So they must put in a negative wave that must fill that so that you don't get that. That boom is really just an absence after you get a what is that called? After you hit a what's the word I'm looking for here? After you, the jets will turn themselves on. There's this absence there, and it gets filled with sound. And so, if you were to send another impulse in, then you could fill that area, and you wouldn't have to create that boom effect. So they must. I mean, that's interesting because, man, if they could solve that, imagine what they could do. What that does to real estate prices in areas that are around airports.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
Because now you've got where folks don't want to be in the flight pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Now you wouldn't hear the airplanes anymore. I'm starting to get that now. Where I live in Rancho Mirage, they've changed the patterns for several of the carriers.
Yeah.
And so the flights come right over my home at, 10 at night. And, it sounds like they're about to land in my backyard.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if whatever they're working on here could help take away some of that sound. At least from some of the jet sound. So,
would it be called a sonic boom?
It would be.
I don't think so.
It would be a moob, is a boom backwards. A backwards boom.
That's going to be another form of travel, folks. Again, the Concorde is coming back, but a new and revamped version, and probably billions more cost than what the other one was. All right, we have to take one more break. When we come back, we have more to talk about. Something about the millennial-minded travelers, what they're looking for when they travel. And Vincent, this might interest you as well, especially with things that have happened in California with the fires and whatnot.
All right.
So we'll be right back. You're listening to Traveling with Francois right here on Money Radio. Thank you. Welcome back to the show. All right. Traveling with Francoise. We are back. Oh, my gosh. Sean, has this gone as fast for you in there as it has for us out here?
Very fast.
Very fast. I know. It's been flying by. And wow. We've only kept Vincent to mention solar just a very few times.
Yes, that's right. We were talking about how much you didn't want me to talk about it, and all of a sudden
no,
it sneaks its way in.
No, you were talking about how much you didn't want to.
I know. Yeah. That's true. It just keeps sneaking in.
It's in your brain all the time.
I know. That's sad,
well,
isn't it?
I watch Vincent on the Facebook page, and you've been going back and forth to Washington so much, talking to – who are you talking to back there?
We march the Hill. We go to Capitol Hill. We talk to Congress folks, their staff, senators, their staff. We have a great legal firm we call one of the gents who takes us around. We call him our solar Sherpa. Because he helps us up and down the hill. We make a series of appointments, and we spend 3 days at 8 offices a day. And I bring Cut the Cord. I bring my book, and that's my calling card. And we talk about solar and storage and the environmental, the monetary savings, and how that's directly infused back into the economy, all the jobs. I mean,
it's just been
– we've done this now for 2 years, and we're going again in December.
Well, sometimes on those posts, I have to say you are looking really serious too.
Yes, I
mean, normally you have that big smile on your face, but sometimes you could see where the whole process has drained you in different aspects, probably talking to different people. Something that keeps popping in my mind, and since you brought it up, since you're going back, or maybe I brought it up, I don't know who brought it up, but
we both brought it.
We on the West Coast sort of take we kind of take solar for granted that it's a given. It's a no-brainer. But when you get on the East Coast, where they get so much more cloud cover and rains and storms and all that sort of stuff, how does solar factor in?
Interesting, yeah. Good
over
good point.
There.
As long as you have a visible spectrum and you can see your hand in front of you, you can convert that spectrum.
Oh, really?
Yep. So even maybe a system here, because of the great clarity of sunlight that we get and how many sun hours we do get, and we don't get as much cloud, and we don't have as much particulate in the air as you know, other states in the union, maybe a system here that would have 10 solar panels in order to achieve a certain amount of energy creation may need 11 in Washington State. It may need 12 in Montana, all because the climate there is a bit different, and the things that shadow the sun and the visible spectrum, may impede performance at all. So you add another module or solar panel or two, and you make up for that. And then you get the same output as us here in California.
So then for me, because I'm California native, I'm kind of partial to California. So I think, how lucky we are that we have all this sunshine. So really, solar is a viable piece
anywhere.
Of around the world.
Around the world.
It's not just here on the West Coast. Well, there you go.
There
That's
it
been
is.
Bugging
well,
me
good.
For a
that,
long time.
Well, I'm glad I'm glad you're talking to me about this. This
I
is good.
I keep thinking, what do they do? We talk about it so much here, and you're going to D.C. and all these places. How do you convince them that that's the way of the – but now I understand it but is. It can be around the world.
And it's the conversation is, anyone who hasn't accepted solar into the energy mix in their state is really just delaying the inevitable.
Okay. Yeah.
And you don't – I used to do it in a rude way. Like, don't you see what's happening here? That's rude.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't like to be told like that.
Yeah.
So I've learned these trips to in front of policymakers. We are now on several committees. Mm-hmm. We'll be speaking at a caucus. So we've gotten ourselves invited back.
Yeah.
So we obviously have something that they find some interest in.
Yes.
And mostly,
now, you're convincing them. You don't give up. And it's true because people, like I say, in my mind, I kept thinking, is it only in the place here and maybe desert regions around the world? But no, it's everywhere. All right.
Yes.
Something else we had going on. And this, there's several millennials always come into play now. A lot of the polls that I read about traveling and whatnot, and sustainability on how the countries take care of the ecosystem, ecology, all these things going on, how they take care of what they're doing for the future of their communities and whatnot. And 77% of young travelers say sustainability impacts their decision to where they travel to.
Wow.
which is, wow. Very interesting. And they say 90% of millennials consider a company's commitment to ethical travel when booking a trip. So they're even the people that they're talking to, they're always, they want to get that in there. They want to see how these countries are taking care of the world and themselves. Hmm. Right here in California, we have all these devastating fires going on. I mean, just horrible. They're wiping out communities.
Yeah.
I know that many of these communities, Vincent, are very old community. So I was thinking about that this morning and trying to think, is there any kind of bright side to all this, which really is so devastating for so many people. However, I thought about you and solar.
Right.
Does this mean now that, many of the people are already saying we're going to rebuild.
Right.
We're going back to where we were. Right.
The earth is still there. The dirt is still there.
The dirt's still there.
You just have to build on it. Right.
The homes, though, how will the homes be now that come up? We're 2018. There's new laws coming out in 2020 about solar.
Right.
How is that going to change the impact of the new builds in areas that are devastated?
It's an opportunity to now build to higher standards, safety standards, as well as environmental standards. The materials that you're using are much more earth-friendly because Title 24 here in California is our building code, and it is one of the it is the most advanced in the United States, where it touches on recycled building materials being used. It touches on the types of Energy Star appliances that are used in a home, so that the footprint of new construction year after year here in California gets better for the environment. Things may cost a little bit more up front, Francoise, but in the long run, those materials last longer, and they allow those structures to be around longer. Now, if a fire comes along, wood is wood, even though it may be from a recycled material, and it will still burn.
Yeah.
But now what's happening, it's horrible what happened in Malibu, some of the awesome homes that were built in the 60s and 70s. But it's an opportunity now to rebuild on that same land with those same views. And in 2020, all of the homes now that will be rebuilt will be under the new rule in California that the Energy Commission put out through Title 24, which requires all structures that have four units or less in them, which means single-family residences up to multi-unit four or less, must have solar installed on them. So that means that they must create and energize and collect their own electricity to help offset in a distributed way, offset the electric needs of that home or of the domicile. So that's going to be a requirement. All of these new homes now being built up there will have that solar requirement attached to them. Again, it adds a little more, but now that new homeowner isn't paying the utility for the electricity to keep them comfortable.
Because climate change is getting warmer and warmer. We have to realize it is getting warmer and warmer.
Keep your air conditioners running. Yeah. Fine. You can keep those air conditioners running. Keep your ice in your ice boxes, be nice and cool and comfortable, but use the sun to generate the electricity because you're not putting any carbon out in generating that electricity, and you're able to sustain a cool environment for yourself and your family, and you're not paying you're not renting from a utility, which costs go up and up. When you own your solar, when you lease your solar under a fixed payment, you can keep that air conditioner running, and you're not going to harm the environment. It'll be a little noisy. Older air conditioners, have a tendency to be noisy, but I think this is interesting what you're saying about the fact that now one of the factors that go into this next generation's thinking on where am I going to go to have a good time is where am I going to go to have a good time and be responsible to the planet.
Yep, it is interesting. All right, were you shocked when you when this 2020 rule was
we were not even given, even our lobbying group CALSA wasn't ready for it, and we were broadsided by it. It just popped in one day, and CEC said, we need to add this to Title 24. So it was a very great surprise, and all of the other Senate bills that were passed a couple of months ago, all great in progress.
Vincent, thank you so much for joining us today. You're going to come back.
If you'll have me
I'll
back.
Have,
yes,
of course I'll have
when
back.
I come back in December.
We still, look, I have this whole pile of stuff.
I know, look
about.
At all this.
Yeah, okay, folks.
The paper shuffle.
Next week on the show, I don't know, we have a lot to talk about, and I have Tournament of Roses grandstand seats and parking. Yeah, we're going to give those away only right here on Traveling with Françoise. Have a good one. And remember, it's never too late to get a life. See you next time. Bye.